In June of 1964, top American military and State Department officials, including Ambassador Henry Cabot Lodge, met in Honolulu. Rusk stated that public opinion on our Southeast Asia policy was badly divided and that, therefore, the president needed an affirmation of support. Diem had been replaced by a general named Khan. The Pentagon historians write, upon his return to Saigon on June 5th, Ambassador Lodge went straight from the airport to call on General Khan. The main thrust of his talk with Khan was to hint that the United States government would, in the immediate future, be preparing U.S. public opinion for actions against North Vietnam. 2 months later came the Gulf of Tonkin affair. On April 2, 1965, a memo from CIA Director John McCone suggested that the bombing of North Vietnam be increased because it was not sufficiently severe to change North Vietnam's policy. On the other hand, we can expect increasing pressure to stop the bombing from various elements of the American public, from the press, the United Nations, and world opinion. The U.S. should try for a fast knockout before this opinion could build up, McCone said. Assistant Secretary of Defense John McNaughton's memo of early 1966 suggested destruction of locks and dams to create mass starvation because strikes at population targets would create a counterproductive wave of revulsion abroad and at home. In May 1967, the Pentagon historians write, McNaughton was also very deeply concerned about the breadth and intensity of public unrest and dissatisfaction with the war, especially with young people, the underprivileged, the intelligentsia, and the women. McNaughton worried, will the move to call up 20,000 reserves polarize opinion to the extent that the doves in the United States will get out of hand, massive refusals to serve or to fight or to cooperate or worse? He warned, there may be a limit beyond which many Americans and much of the world will not permit the United States to go. The picture of the world's greatest superpower killing or seriously injuring 1,000 noncombatants a week while trying to pound a tiny backward nation into submission on an issue whose merits are hotly disputed is not a pretty one. It could conceivably produce a costly distortion in the American national consciousness. That costly distortion seems to have taken place by the spring of 1968, when, with the sudden and scary Tet Offensive of the National Liberation Front, Westmoreland asked President Johnson to send him 200,000 more troops on top of the 525,000 already there. Johnson asked a small group of action officers in the Pentagon to advise him on this. They studied the situation and concluded that 200,000 troops would totally Americanize the war and would not strengthen the Saigon government because the Saigon leadership shows no signs of a willingness, let alone an ability, to attract the necessary loyalty or support of the people. Furthermore, the report said, sending troops would mean mobilizing reserves, increasing the military budget. There would be more U.S. casualties, more taxes, and this growing disaffection, accompanied as it certainly will be, by increased defiance of the draft and growing unrest in the cities because of the belief that we are neglecting domestic problems, runs great risks of provoking a domestic crisis of unprecedented proportions. The growing unrest in the cities must have been a reference to the black uprisings that had taken place in 1967 and showed the link, whether blacks deliberately made it or not, between the war abroad and poverty at home. The evidence from the Pentagon Papers is clear that Johnson's decision in the spring of 1968 to turn down Westmoreland's request to slow down for the first time the escalation of the war, to diminish the bombing, to go to the conference table, was influenced to a great extent by the actions Americans had taken in demonstrating their opposition to the war. When Nixon took office, he too tried to persuade the public that protest would not affect him, but he almost went berserk when one lone pacifist picketed the White House. The frenzy of Nixon's actions against dissidents, plans for burglaries, wiretapping, mail openings, suggest the importance of the anti-war movement in the minds of national leaders. One sign that the ideas of the anti-war movement had taken hold in the American public was that juries became more reluctant to convict anti-war protesters, and local judges, too, were treating them differently. In Washington, by 1971, judges were dismissing charges against demonstrators in cases where 2 years before they almost certainly would have been sent to jail. The anti-war groups who had raided draft boards, the Baltimore Four, the Catonsville Nine, the Milwaukee 14, the Boston Five, and more, were receiving lighter sentences for the same crimes. The last group of draft board raiders, the Camden 28, were priests, nuns, and laypeople who raided a draft board in Camden, New Jersey in August 1971. It was essentially what the Baltimore Four had done 4 years earlier, when all were convicted and Phil Berrigan got 6 years in prison. But in this instance, the Camden defendants were acquitted by the jury on all counts. When the verdict was in, one of the jurors, a 53-year-old black taxi driver from Atlantic City named Samuel Braithwaite, who had spent 11 years in the Army, left a letter for the defendants. "To you, the clerical physicians with your God-given talents, I say well done. Well done for trying to heal the sick, irresponsible men, men who were chosen by the people to govern and lead them. These men who failed the people by raining death and destruction on a hapless country. You went out to do your part while your brothers remained in their ivory towers watching. And hopefully someday in the near future, peace and harmony may reign to people of all nations." That was in May of 1973. The American troops were leaving Vietnam. C.L. Sulzberger, the New York Times correspondent, a man close to the government, wrote, "The U.S. emerges as the big loser, and history books must admit this. We lost the war in the Mississippi Valley, not the Mekong Valley. Successive American governments were never able to muster the necessary mass support at home. In fact, the United States had lost the war in both the Mekong Valley and the Mississippi Valley. It was the first clear defeat to the global American empire formed after World War II. It was administered by revolutionary peasants abroad and by an astonishing movement of protest at home. Back on September 26, 1969, President Richard Nixon, noting the growing anti-war activity all over the country, announced that, under no circumstance will I be affected, whatever, by it. But 9 years later, in his memoirs, he admitted that the anti-war movement caused him to drop plans for an intensification of the war. Although publicly I continued to ignore the raging anti-war controversy, I knew, however, that after all the protests anti the moratorium, American public opinion would be seriously divided by any military escalation of the war. It was a rare presidential admission of the power of public protest. From a long-range viewpoint, something perhaps even more important had happened. The rebellion at home was spreading beyond the issue of war in Vietnam.